morning, honorable members. Whilst we're still waiting for each department, we have an agenda in front of us. We're supposed to start with them, but because we're not yet seeing them, can't members allow that we must start with the minutes in the meanwhile, not just sit, which means I'm putting the agenda to be amendment, to amend it. I'm putting the agenda in front of you, honorable members. Hello, honorable Kaban.
Greetings, Chakasin. I move to second your submission to the portfolio committee that let's start with the minutes whilst we are still waiting for the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kaban. Any second? Honorable Adams.
Thank you, Chair. I second the proposal of for the agenda and the amendments.
Thank you, honourable members. We do have some apologies. I'm having an apology of Mr. Siabe. He started from another meeting here in Parliament called Strategy. And then I'm having an apology from Honourable Mamabulo is writing exams. And I'm having an apology from Honorable Mhlongo. I'm having an apology. Mr. Faber is getting late. These are all apologies that we are having. Can we start with the anyone who's not agreeing on the proposal of that we must start with the minutes. Any objection? None. Let's start with the set of minutes. Let's start with the one on 8th of October. Look at the page 1 on the minutes of the 8th of October. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page
I move the adoption of the minutes.
I second your question.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 9th October.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm seconding.
Discussion, searching page, why is the department not participating in training regarding this article? It is on, it was on two.
Which page?
Five. Discussion, the searching page, it's left out the form, not left out, to use the sentence.
On page one, I just want to make a correction. I think there's an omission. A friend was present in the meeting, but I can't see my name. I also move for the adoption of the minutes with the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Any second?
Chairperson, I reserve my right to support this. I reserve the right, my right to your doctor.
Of discussion, but
a lot of my questions are never answered.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
What logic anyone who supporting the lineage to be adopted?
No, not a chairperson. I just, I'm not supporting our board, I'm not there. But I tell not the chair, that is one question that you put up, then you say that we're not supporting instead of the early good night. So that it can be, they can be part of amendment.
The proposal that raise your question in order that you must know which question was not answered when you were adopting the minutes and saying that there was a member with what a concern because of his question was not answered in order that you must have a proper table of minutes, because the minutes, they are not belonging to us. We take these minutes to the of Parliament and the Parliament at large.
Chairperson, they don't reflect the, it's like they when the questions are asked them and everything that is to them is what they're supposed to, but there were a lot of questions that I was told that they were going to answer later, and that is not recorded here. Thank you, Chair.
Wanted you to tell us those questions in order that we must note in our minutes, in order that our minutes must be a true reflection. So maybe forgotten those.
No. Thank you, Chair. The first question that I asked this was Paul Mashatile's role in that in transport and economy. And the DG promised to come back, you know, for that question later. And and also the other question that I had was like the department involved auditing team for the project in the last 5 years, and that never was answered. And another question that was never answered was who was the DG during that time? That one was overlooked. And another one that DG answered in a way that he wanted to know why that question was being asked was the management team. If there the one, is there a management team and who are they? And also the one that this that got the money taken 13.6 million, and the question was why are they still given that money while the questionable accounting of the money that they got 5 years back, and the answer was there will be a report coming from an independent body. So that is not recorded here. Thank you.
Like the last one that you see is not recorded, which means it's not the true reflection of what we're discussing. I'm talking about in the last week's question, that 16.6, and then the management team who was there. Maybe it's nice that. We started with these minutes and the department is with us. Did you want our minutes to be true reflection? Are you aware of these questions of Dr. Paul Mashatile? He did raise. Forgotten about it, the audit team, number four, who was the DG on that time, he was raising it, but in the minutes it's not there.
And the issue of the SIU and what they have asked and whether we have to submit.
then the CFO, sorry to SID, but the CFO responded quite in detail, indicating the issue of appointing the independent person and the people, so that we can then not be seen to be biased with other information, and indicated that the SIU does not sanction the private. So I thought the Honourable Madam was we answered that. If it's a new question about the funding of SIFSA, that will be a different issue.
Chairperson, the question was, under what grounds did the department offer to give SIFSA additional 13.6 million without SIFSA giving accounting information for the money it got for the previous 4 years? And if there are, can we see the financials? That was my question. It came out like that. Thank you.
Mr. Mabaso will respond if I miss that question.
In our resolution, we said SIFSA financials to be submitted. Let's stick to on that. They are not yet submitted. That's the resolution that is taken. So, can you shelve these minutes to go and be corrected, especially that this information which is not here, especially the financial to be submitted. But I'm suspecting all other questions are just being responded. I'm putting to you, the honourable members, what is your feeling about these minutes? Because any other things they are explaining as we're sitting here, and the staff are correcting and putting the flesh. Can you say that we're adopting these minutes with the additional information and the question of submission of documents of SIFSA, which is not yet submitted? I want that you must reflect on that,
Thank you, Chair. Yes, if the minutes could be justified and everything be presented, there's no reason for me not to adopt.
Thank you, Chair. I also wanted to say, because we are in the corrections and additions of the edits and the corrections, let's adopt it for our company.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not going to let the executive from outside. I
didn't have that. I tried to establish and re-establish, and then my team still continued to confirm our contract. And so, once we were here, we were in the tower. So, I think there must have been just some communication there. But thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members, and the pleasure again to be here in front of the Auckland House presenting one of the key papers that we believe is capable of transforming the sector for the good of the country. And so the presentation is talking to the what was starting with the white paper. The repeat first of the one that was from yesterday was from the previous meeting. I will then, Honorable Chair, just request that Mr. Mabaso takes us through that one. I will then take one of the white paper in relation to the two presentations. That's how we have split ourselves. I request, but let me just send apologies for my colleague, for Mr. Dima, who is DG for Heritage Promotion. He's not here because of that, HPP, and then the rest of the team that is also here is here. Honorable Chair, thank you very much. And Mr. Mabaso.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm presenting a slide on the findings and repeat fees for Hatchin. And the content will cover the following. It will be introduction, the current practice, repeat fees currently being paid, amendments to the copyright regime, improvement in the copyright regime, collection and distribution of royalties, and the copyright tribunal. Introduction. We are saying that the reason behind the failure to protect artists in the country and to deter this abusive business behavior in the sector lies mainly within the gaps that exist in the copyright legislation of the country. Copyright Act was adopted in 1978 and the Performance Protection Act of 1967, if you look at both of them, are very old, and you look at the current situation, so much has happened. The whole industrial sector has evolved. We speak about knowledge economy. So the purpose of looking at this bill and trying to amend them is to try to respond to the responsive government in order to make sure that issues of copyright remain relevant, they protect practitioners, and practitioners basically their rights are covered. DC therefore believes that we need to make improvements to the copyright reforms that is currently underway. The current practice is basically based on the Roman Dutch law, which means currently there are no laws that compel the payment of royalties in the audiovisual components. The business relationship is being managed through contracts. In this instance, it will be a contract of commissioned work. Commissioned work is basically me requesting you to paint a piece of art, and because I've commissioned you, I then determine how much I'm going to pay you, and it appears, you know, normal and fair, but the relationship is not, because one, you are commissioned, the other one is doing the work, and because there are no laws that are protecting the person who's going to draft that piece of work, so the relationships are not in unequal footing. So that is one of the problems. And the bills are trying to introduce a system where there'll be fair use and where, you know, there'll be contractual obligations and there'll be standards and procedures. And in the case of disputes, there'll be a tribunal that you can refer you to. As I indicated, that the foundation of South African common law of contract is based on the principle of freedom of contract taken from the Roman Dutch law. Freedom of contract is based on presumption that the parties to a contract are in equal bargaining position. The system sounds harmless, as I indicated, but this approach to contracting
has a provision to protect only certain parties of the contract in place of all parties, as I indicated. Repeat fees currently being paid. As previously indicated, currently there are no laws that compel the payment of royalties. It's left to two individuals to engage in a relationship and they'll determine how much which is paid. Where repeat fees, the royalties are being paid, such arrangements are negotiated through contractual means. Unfortunately, the country also don't have strong formations or organizations that are currently developing standards and procedures in terms of, for instance, how much royalties are going to be paid. It totally depends on either a recording company that, right, you contract you for 3 years, will give you X percentage of the royalty, so you won't have a say, because it appears that they are doing you a favor. Because there are thousands of people out there who also want the contract. So people are giving from 3%, if you have done it, you are great, it is about 11%. So the whole system is just not standardized. Payment is done directly to individual artists or their managers. As there are no national collecting societies to manage collecting and distribution of such royalties, the current situation is that royalties will be paid directly from a recording company to an artist, where their collecting agencies are not even represented by creators of work. It's people who are basically business people who run these entities on behalf of artists, and they determine also how much is paid. So the situation is not as transparent as we'd like to see. The absence of national collecting society makes it very complicated system, and it's not easy to manage. And the amendment tries to regularize and standardize and make sure that the process of collecting societies are registered legally. In cases, contracts for actors from all productions were not kept, and the absence of reliable database that also include lack of contact details of the actors or their heads also makes payment of such royalties impossible. The argument currently going, they will say, Charles Novas, we can't find him because we don't have his details. Is somewhere in Kibasa, so his royalties, they can't pay because they can't trace it. So part of the amendment is to make sure that the database is kept across the board and people are registered and they are represented by creators in the collecting society. So everybody knows what's happening, is determined, price are arranged, and standardized and legal. The amendments to the copyright regime, two bills were passed last year by the National Assembly and subsequently by the NCOP agency. The aim of the bill is to amend the 1967 Performance Protection Act and the Copyright Act of 1937, which are very old and not in line with international standards. The bill incorporated the latest treaties such as the Beijing Treaty on Audiovisual, the World Intellectual Property Copyright Treaty, also known as the YCT, and the Wider Performance Program Treaty. YCT was created to address changes in the digital technology and communication, particularly the distribution of digital protected works over the internet, known as the Internet Treaties. WCT was enacted along with the WIPO Performance and Pornograph Treaty to respond to the new marketplace and technological development. As I indicated, that now people stream their music, you can sell your artwork in the internet, so that the intention is that let's try to regularize that and respond to the changes that are taking place. The Beijing Treaty was adopted in 2012 as part of modernizing and update the copyright and the digital era to an extent of protection of performance audiovisual. Likewise, the Beijing Treaty encompasses the performance of actors in different media and grants four kinds of economic rights for their performance fixed in audiovisual sectors: the right of reproduction, the right of distribution, the right of rental, the right of making your content available. It is necessary to incorporate all these treaties into our copyright regime to be in line with modern standards. While doing this, we also took cognizance of the need to address the issues of transformation dealing with dealings, especially within the challenging swing from the current and continuing justice and shameful business practices that I indicated that is based on the Roman Dutch law. Improvement in the copyright regime.
in the current Copyright Act, the default position is that he who commissions owns the work and performance are being paid just for the work done during the commission. The new bill seeks to level the playing field that there shall be standard contracts in all business engagements. The ownership of copyright surviving the commissioner shall be governed by written contract. An agreement may limit the ownership only for the purpose of commission, and any other further usage of the work will be regulated by law through contract. Performers shall have the right to share the royalties received by the copyright owner. Where there is a dispute, the matter shall be referred to a copyright tribunal. If the work is used for purposes other than purpose of commission, payment of royalties shall be ordered. Where the work is not used by the person who commissioned the work for the purpose of commission, the proposed law makes provisions for licensing the author to use that work for such purpose, subject to fee determined by a tribunal payable to the person who commissioned. So there'll be an independent structure, the tribunal, who will then look into the relationship and determine what is due to the creator of content and what is due to the person who has commissioned. So that will be the kind of a relationship that will govern the two parties. This amendment will help relieve the plight of performers whose work is still earn large sums of money through rebroadcasting in excess of what was anticipated when the original commission agreement was concluded. Because when you are commissioned, you don't know what's going to happen to your painting, what's going to happen to your music. It can be used with a film, and because initially when you signed, you didn't message that, so you may not even get those royalties going forward. So the intention is to try and protect and have a contract that will give you those issues. Even if in future you rebroadcast, then you are still going to benefit as a content creator. Collection and distribution of royalties. A national collecting society will be established to manage the rights of all performers. A national collecting society shall be defined as a non-profit that is owned by holders of rights, whose only members are holders of rights to whom members have gained mandates to license. So the holders of rights will sit together, determine and form standards and procedures, and agree on set fees that needs to be paid, unlike the current situation where your royalties, you know, come directly from a recording company on based on the contract that you have signed, probably for 3% or 12% royalty fee. It will then be a criminal offense to collect without a permission, because you need to be regularized, you need to be known, and you need to declare. National Collecting Society shall submit to the Commission the administration reports as may be prescribed, thus bringing good governance in the areas of collecting and distribution of royalties. It shall be a legal requirement that all commercial users of content to submit complete through an accurate report to the Collecting Society. This will cap non-payment by users, and it shall be a criminal offense to fail to keep and submit such information as and when required. Then there shall be an independent structure that is proposed. The Copyright Tribunal shall be established to adjudicate an application or referral made to it in terms of this act. This will include to settle disputes relating to the licensing schemes, payment of royalties, or terms of agreement entered into as required by this act. We believe that if we continue with this bill, it will introduce the guidelines for contract engagement. It will introduce clear rules on commission work. It will introduce the standardized process for royalty regarding individual work. It will oversee the administration of rights, and penalties will be levied on those who don't comply, because we have a copyright tribunal. Honorable members, the issue, not everybody agrees with this process, this amendment, because there are diverse views regarding this, but you are proposing that it's better to start somewhere and move, because the current acts are old, and if you look at the current, what has happened to society that's involved in the digital space, we need to be responsive as government and try to assist our performers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
The president is a said it's led to Parliament. Are you aware of that? And what does that mean? It's 1st November 2019.
Honorable Chair, and honorable members, the President is
It has been referred back because there have been various parties that have sent letters to the presidency, and there have been various representations where people have been disagreeing with the bill. From the library sector, people have views, and some people believe that it won't really protect the performance. So, but also critical, the president was asking whether we did consult, and it was indicated that this process started some time back, and DTI has had several consultations. We wanted to check also that we did not infringe on the rights of, for example, copyright rights, rights of individuals, rights of ownership and distribution. So there are various contestations. So our view is that much as there are diverse views on these issues, but we cannot wait and not aside. Let's continue, and where there are issues, let's address the issues step by step, and the formation of a tribunal probably will address some of the challenges that are faced. But that's where we are. I'm not sure if I'm just...
Maybe a further question. Information that it was referred by the President, when you're presenting now, are you covering on what President has referred this to because of those problems? Honourable members, let's hear from himself and then engage on it.
Actually, I don't think it was referred back. It currently is with the president, but they've raised this question to say, was the consultation that is not infringing and those kind of things. So both DTI, in fact, we got the letter yesterday, DTI and ourselves, we are responding to say, we are proposing a suggestion that the president must sign, because all processes started, I mean, from 2013, there have been various consultations until 2019. Although people have written a letter, but you are proposing that unless we are able to see what happens. I'm not sure if you should agree.
Did you?
Yes, Honorable Chair, in fact, there are three questions that the legal team of the President have sent to us to attend to and be able to give feedback to my presidency. And that we will be meeting tomorrow at 2 with the TTI to deal with those issues and advise and give response to the President and the President's legal team in relation to those three matters. And that the legal team of the President and the President have directly put forth for the two departments to advise. Maybe I can just add, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that indeed there were three, the President did ask that the Minister even previously meet together with the Minister of DTI, meet with the sector, and that meeting did take place. And in that meeting there were two views, very strong divergent views, about those who were saying sign President and those who were saying don't sign. Such that the two ministers then said they must meet separately, and we broke into a short period to give them opportunity to present and concretize their side of what exactly they believe is correct. So again, when they came back, there were those, particularly the writers, the publishers, who were feeling very strongly that, particularly Section 12 of the Copyright Amendment Bill, dealing with issues of intellectual property, is not sufficiently protected by this act. But on the other hand, there were those who were saying, particularly the performers themselves, who were feeling that this is long overdue, because it comes from the period of, I think, the Judge Davis commission that was done on this area, and artists in particular remain vulnerable in terms of royalties and all those things. So eventually three areas that came out as areas of contestation there, and what could be the way for, whether they say don't sign it on, President refer this back, let the issue of particular Section 12 be addressed, and that the safety measures that are put in the act might not be adequate, the tribunal might not be strong enough to be able to deal with the matters, it might be costly and all those things. And then the rules were saying, no, sign, we start somewhere and make sure that at least the writers, the performers are protected by this act. Then there was another idea that was saying, no, rather separate the two bills of the performers and the copyright, but that have its own complexity. So those were the permutations that were there. But at this stage, and the best thing is that we will be meeting tomorrow as the two departments, responding to the questions raised by the President's legal team, and based on that, we should be able to then advise this honorable committee on what are the decisions of that, because the custodians of these two bills are the CI, not necessarily Department of Arts and Culture. And maybe this might help at some point, then maybe we jointly present to this committee as TCI and Arts and Culture. And so that at the end of the day, it is clear. But there will be that meeting tomorrow at 2.
Yeah. Thank you for the information. That's why we put it in our agenda. Honorable Scott, Honorable Sunday, Honorable Chaisa,
thank you, Che. Che, yes, I am just a little bit disillusioned. I'm not 100% sure, but when I was in NCOP in the previous term, I know they know as well, the presenters, we were on the first floor in Marx Building on DTI, and we had all the role players, media, the writers, the public. Publishers, actors, performers. I promise you, I've never in 10 years seen a committee room so full, TV cameras, etc. actually, we had to add extra chairs there. So there was public participation. But the question I do have, that was through DPI on the NCOP. Now we're sitting here with Arts and Culture. Now, I obviously understand why Arts and Culture with actors, etc., why we are involved with it. But where does the mandate actually lie? And in which ministry does it lie? Because we are now two different committees actually working on one act. Now I must be quite honest. It's like the one hand is not exactly knowing what the other one's doing. We're sitting here discussing things, DPI is discussing things there. My question is, should we not all get together in this and have a work group in this? Because at this stage, to be quite honest, I don't have an idea what DPI's stance is on this. You know, what our colleagues in those committees are talking about. We get a presentation here on an overview, and luckily I was there the previous time, so I've got quite a good background on this. But I haven't got a background why the president sent it back. Was it because maybe he wanted Arts and Culture? Because Arts and Culture, I don't think, was that time involved with it. Was only through us and DPI. Now, was this maybe the whole idea that Arts and Culture must now get involved with it? Because if that is the reason, then I can't see how we can do this alone. Then I want to suggest that it should be a combined BPI art and culture meeting where this can be sorted out, because at this stage, man, sorry, Che, we are really not going to talk about each other. We will not finalize the body to go like that.
Chairperson, I actually have a lot of questions on this document from the cover page to the end. So I'm not sure if it's going to be, if there's time that we can speak on this. I need to get clarity on some of the things that is put to us, because on the front page it says repeat fees for artists, but the repeat fees are only applicable to actors who signed a contract. So it should be repeat broadcast and commercial exploitation. Fees for artists, because that's the main issue here. Royalties is paid to artists and repeat fees to the actors. So what we need to achieve here is to get a legislation so that that broadcasting and exploitation of the artists after the product has been commissioned, or they produced it, and that they still continue on a continuous basis can receive royalties. But with an actor, when they sign a contract like with SABC and ETV, they actually get it right. They, in their contract, they have it that there's a repeat fee which the artists or the actors can collect. But what happens with some of the contracts like MTN and MultiChoice, they don't, in their contract, they, when they commission work, it's a free enterprise. We must also remember that it's a free enterprise, so they negotiate for a fee, and the actor decides whether they want to take that or not. And the question there is that, my question is it not then for, if they decide to sign the contract on that basis, is it not then a business decision? And how can we, there's just another thing I also the copyright. It says on page 3, the reasons behind the failure to protect artists, lies within the gaps that exist in copyright. But it's not possible for Copyright Act to give artists copyright protection, because they're not the copyright owners. And the copyright belongs to the commissioner of the work. That's how I have it. I just need to get it straight. And then, as I said, SABC and ETV is already there with their contracts. At the moment, there's no laws that force a private business like MultiChoice or a free enterprise to share their their profit. But I also want to know, perhaps the if you take in the Beijing Treaty, why have we not signed that? Because that's also can you explain to the committee precisely what that entails? And why have we not signed that? Again, on page 4, slide 4, it refers to royalties, but it should be repeat fee or broadcast or non or commercial exploitation fees, because again, it's, the actors are not copyright owners, and therefore we cannot pay royalties. I also have a point on that collecting societies. That's applicable on the musicians, but not on the actors, because their contract already makes provision for them that they there's an invoice which makes sure that they and the Performance Act Protection Act, the wording as it is, to my understanding, is more for musicians. I think that was intended in 1967, so I think that's why we're now busy with this. But another thing I also want to just get clarity on. So, a copyright tribunal on page 10 or slide 10. I again feel that that sentence, bullet point 1, is a confusion between royalties and contractual fees. A copyright tribunal means a tribunal only for copyright owners, not for actors who do not have copyright, but contractual
negotiated right. And then the last point, I think, is if we not rather can consider an independent ombudsman for the industry as a whole to adjudicate on disputes between from actors, producers, writers, and broadcasters in the entertainment industry of a copyright tribunal as indicated by the Copyright Act. That's my, I'm just confused on the fact between the feed and the copyright. It seems as if this document doesn't clearly itself, this document does not separate the two terms as it should be. And that's why there's so much confusion.
There is a proposal on the table saying that by tomorrow these two departments are going to meet, because whilst saying that there is a problem that the president has referred back to parliament, also are being briefed. The follow-up step is that the Department of DCI and this department, they must go and meet. I'm not saying let's not ask questions. Maybe when they've met, we'll be having a fine document. But I'm not saying we must not ask questions. Honorable Jay?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. All of you, well, we have nearly finished it, but there's only one slide that's left now. I'm quite to this question. Let us just appreciate the efforts that are being made for the purpose of putting rights for things for our artists. That is correct. I just want to find that there's only one question. I want to establish to find that perhaps when these realities are paid to managers, not to artists, is there no cheating perhaps by the manager? How do you know that they are not being cheated? So this type of enough now that you know that is what amount of the services are paid to the manager when it goes to the artist. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, I'm not sure
if
I heard correctly.
Thank you, Chef. Thank you for the presentation. I'm hearing Honorable Faber talking about that day where they will cameras and extra chairs in that room, and I think that day should be repeated. Yes, there will be this tomorrow meeting, but that tomorrow meeting will still be on another level. We need to have that very same meeting where DTI and you know, get together and we look at it. Not only the heads, but everyone, you know, so that we look at it and talk about it, and maybe after that, then the two heads can get together and come up with a beautiful document. On the question of the artist being you know, having to have that a permission to go and collect their money. Does this mean that any person who is collecting his or her money should be having that accreditation as a collection society, even if that's what they do? Because now we're having artists dealing directly with the consumer. So, you know, one is going to go and then make means into having to connect with all these, you know, platforms, and they pay direct. So I don't know now how it will happen. And talking about the repeat fees, we do have singers and voiceovers having to get paid for repeating of adverts that they sing in or they have voiceover. So we have the artists getting paid for repeat. And it has been there were very few of artists who would go and fight for their rights to get their repeat. But I've done a lot of adverts. I'm one of those that fought and got to get my money being paid for repeat, because a lot of these advertisers, they refused, saying that it was not, there was no law about that. So we were sort of like a fight about that. They said, if there's no law about that, then there's no law for you to repeat your voice in your advert. So they had to cut it out sometimes or come in and pay me something. So we really need to look at that, you know, that the I guess because there is that vague law that protects artists into that, and I think you know the committee needs to look at that thoroughly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to support the view of that because tomorrow the thing of the meeting. Let us go to that meeting and then discuss, and then after that, both committees will attend the meeting so that we can page a way forward. So I think that's important. Because we'll discuss issues this side and come up with a way forward or views. And the other side, they're also discussing coming up with differences. So if we will be in the same room discussing one issue that is affecting both communities, I think it will be better. Thank you.
We've noted the questions, and I think also support that. Let's take some of the questions that are raised here to the meeting tomorrow, so that collectively, and then we can give a detailed report to the general city and so on.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start with I think the issue of the concept of repeat vis-a-vis copyright, maybe it would have been better that this presentation was based on the copyright amendment base rather than isolated repeat fees. Maybe that is where the element one of the fund take as we put it might have created a problem, because then the focus is on an isolated aspect when in fact you are dealing with the bill, two bills in fact that are trying to address various areas that negatively affect the creatives in particular. So that's why maybe even the point of reference for the Davis Commission issue would have assisted on the what is the mischief that is being addressed or being attempted to be addressed in this matter. So, and I think the Honorable Chair has stated well in relation to the repeat fees. Because Honorable Chair and all members, one of the key issues is that when there's a let's take an example of when I was in Tanzania and also when I was in Botswana, you find that the people are playing the song of Brenda Fassie. Now, the question was, how does Brenda Fassie's family get back what is due to them when those radio stations, when you go to the malls, they are playing this music? And you find that they die being poor, but their music lives forever. And these repeated things, then the collection society's role, what is it that assists the artists, the creatives, to be able to get what is true to them? Now, the essence then of us working together with DTR was based on that. We were asked that we've been having people who are working with the team of DTI and to make sure that as the process of finalizing these bills up to the level where they were passed by Parliament to move to the President for consideration. And we were still part and parcel of that team working together. But Mr. Mabazo has put it quite clearly that there was an issue of what we do with royalties, what should be happening. Because the performers, the creatives, have been saying the Davis Commission has long made recommendations and clearly we are not protected, we are not safe. There is a gap in the law. That's what Honourable Elsa is saying. So we then, from that angle, hence this was passed. It was based really on looking in particular, emphasizing that exploitation has to stop. But the copyright aspect, the people who create work before I perform, had concern about two of the particular things, was that they don't have adequate protection in this law in terms of Section 12, as I indicated. And in that they are not sure about if you make copies, if you reuse their work without their permission and all those things, what does that mean for them? And it will affect more people from producing creative work because it will have that impact, even within the educational work. So those are the aspects that were raised by the publishers, the writers themselves. The second thing was then the era of digital technology. What does this mean? If Google uses it, is are we now selling out, to use the strong word, that is what the writer, the problem, are we selling out their work to the digital platforms, because then they were not going to benefit. There's no guarantee how this is going to work for them. So I think that is why maybe it's better that we do come and have that joint presentation, which then links to the question by Honorable Faber around the issue of who is the custodian of this bill. Currently the custodian is DTI, who are dealing with this budget. President, in his wisdom, had found that it's necessary also as well as the minister that we work together, because artists and creatives come to us in culture as people who must look after their future. And that is why this joint venture is addressing the matter on the chair. So I think, as proposed, that then we do go back and maybe then have an opportunity to come back and deal with the matter. But also then they have clarity that the committee wants more broad presentation on the performance bill as well as the copyright, and or is it only the repeat fee that the focus is on, so that the information is clear to the parties concerned. But that is what we will then be able to do. Thank you.
Taking that on your first proposal and saying it was fair. So, honorable members, let's go to the consideration and adoption of the briefing from the Department of Arts and Culture on the white paper. While you are still there, in case other people, to spread to some other communities. The focus made us to be very, very proud that the couple stay at home and they are taking rounds. I had to ask that by Monday, whilst I know it's the hour on school today, they must pass by in Parliament. And I asked that they must come and take picture next to statue of Uma Dewa, and they must be around the prison of Parliament. Request is really with the Saru, and I've spoken to the Department, to the advisor of the minister, but they are not around. So I'm suspecting come end of the week, the SMSs will be out love that you are around on Monday, which is a constituency. You must mobilize the families, the police, and go to the visitor area in order that when they are allowed, that they must come. Someone wanted that they must come inside the house, the plenary. Unfortunately, by Tuesday, they will be going away. So I took this advantage of Imande. Imande, they are scheduled that they will be around Cape Town, but they are not yet responded at what time that they can pass by the parliament. But they made us proud. Some of us who did go there and we shared the luck. And then the minister and president take that luck that we brought there. And then today, the car is back again. Did you?
And
I've heard your answer. This is the first time that we've been briefed about this. So we've been saying that this committee, we do want this white paper. So it's upon you to take us that you must understand where are you, what have you done about the white paper, because we're supporting that and we want it. That it must be amongst the priority legislation that the parliament has prioritized. I thank you.
And Honorable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to present the results of the paper on arts and culture and heritage. Then, Honorable Chair, just to establish that honorable members, you have the presentation as well as the socio-economic impact, as well as the revised white paper itself. We will try to make sure that these attachments are there so that the honorable members are able to make ease of reference on them. Then, honorable chair, the white paper presentation outline will provide the background, the time frame that were involved in the process, but also the revision itself on whether the consultations, how they were done, the overview of the revised white paper, as well as the revised white paper now, the new one, then the proposed new dispensation, what was the socio-economic impact assessment, as well as the some of the benefits that will accrue and arising from the revised white paper issue. So today we are here to provide an update to the committee on the process of reviewing the white paper on arts, culture and heritage and what is the current status of that. Then in 2015, Honorable Chair, there was a ministerial reference panel that was appointed and to really look at the issue of the White Paper of 1996, and the appointed chairperson was a Professor Oliphant, who was chairing that 9-member reference panel. It is important to share with the committee that some of those key members were appointed mainly because they were also part and parcel and had an institutional memory in relation to the very first white paper. So it was important that the continuity and therefore be able to neutralize their knowledge and skills in that regard. And that was the credibility of those members. The emphasis on the white paper then was to look at what are the weaknesses within white paper, how does it align with the provisions or priorities of government currently, and the policies of the department, but also just the orientation towards the national government goals in relation to the cultural creative industry heritage as well as arts. in general. And then determine what could be the interventions that need to be made in order to realign the white paper in this regard. But also it was to then provide us with the recommendations on the future role of the entities within the TAC. Currently we've got 25 entities as a department, and the issue is, can we look at how we can reconfigure these entities for greater benefit, but also at a cost-effective manner, and whether they are beneficiary in the manner in which they are. And this is more in relation to the board, not necessarily abolishing the entities themselves, but in relation to the board. But also it moved then into how you deal with the issue of what's currently under the period of review. This paper was focused on the issue of arts and culture. So it is important to also indicate that there was also a concern about the emphasis on heritage, that heritage is missing if we talk, but it gets added towards the end as we try to remember, oh, it's arts, culture, and heritage. So the issue of, you know, the naming of the department became an issue to say, where is the emphasis about the heritage? So then after the appointment in 2015, there was then the first endeavor that was held by the reference panel, and that endeavor then had the work plan that they agreed to as of February 2016. The outcomes of that were that provincial draft, first provisional draft of internal discussion was to be developed and be finalized by end of March. The second issue was the consultation with the various subsectors, which was then given a timeline of up to June 2016. And then it was the second draft, which would be based on what the public had to say, based on the draft document that would have been produced by end of July. Then the second draft was indeed circulated the 1st of August 2016. Revisions were then made based on what public consultations and inputs were, and that was between September to November 2016. And if we look then at the national sector in Naba, to give feedback to those who were part of the first national in Naba, that took place on the 17th and 18th of November 2016. Now, February 2016, at an inception of the report, what was discussed and what was said there? Firstly, was that the scope and recommendation of what the white paper of 1996 say. What does it say? What are the prescripts there? And what are the articles that need to be addressed? And how wide does it cover the sector? Identifying obstacles to transformative policy implementation, and because that was also a key issue on how to transform the sector. And that means end to end in all of its subsectors. Then identifying what are the new trends in cultural policy, both locally and internationally, and how should these trends be then accommodated into the policy and the revised white paper. Then there was the methodology and the process that was recommended, which is what has been outlined above in terms of the timeline. Sometimes the product can be very good, but if the process is wrong, it becomes a problem. And therefore then this nine-member reference panel needed to be very clear about how they're going to do the review, and how are they going to be involved with, who are the partners that are going to be consulted. And based on that, then the consultations were done throughout the provinces. That was between April and June 2016. Who were involved in these consultations? Among others were the multiple government departments, including basic education, higher education, science, technology, TTI, as well as the Ministry of International Relations and Cooperation. And consultations were also held with the national agencies and institutions, and that means performing art institutions, funding institutions, the FDIs of the, in the sector, the heritage institutions like ARIF, the SARA, and all these were done with a view that broad consensus must be found on what should be the content of the revised white paper and how it can promote art, culture and heritage in the country. Then the first draft, then I have spoken to those timelines, and I will not repeat them, Honorable Chair, but just to indicate the 1.6, that then when after the November 2016 and second draft was completed and tabled at Indaba, the sector was then invited to make submissions until December 2016, which resulted in the third draft, and that was then finalized in the 3rd of February 2017, and then the fourth draft was finalized in October 2017, and briefing then took place in March and 2017 and November 2018. We can indicate to the portfolio committee, we can indicate, Chair, that one of the key delays in this paper being finalized later than intended, was that the government has a new approach, as you will see there, that says you cannot just table legislative review without doing socio-economic impact assessment. And there was then a need to filter that process. And we then did that and received the report on the SAFER, which was then done in October 2017, and then had to then follow the cluster process again to present for consideration. But the question is, why, if you already had a white paper in 1996, do you need to revise this paper again now at the time? And the rationale there, Honorable Chair, was among others, was that there were a number of sections that were looked at and were seen to be outdated and out of sync with the present political and sector approach to developing the cultural and creative industries. And increasing its contribution became quite more critical, and particularly in the era of fighting the triple challenge of employment, of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. This is what we, if we just take a step back, it would be important that the CCI, which is Cultural and Creative Industry, has been on the periphery. Also, the country has looked at the mainstream industries as mining, as manufacturing. This issue of cultural and creative industry and the value to it to the economic contribution and development of a state has not really been given the attention it deserves. And therefore it became quite critical that the relook is done on how it can help also the country overcome this persistent triple challenge we have. So the revision then was initiated to update national policies for the sector in light of the change in the new developments that were taking place in the past 2 decades or in the past 20 years to see what can be done around that. So the revision was then to also consolidate the democratic dispensation and to reposition it to effectively accelerate transformation by addressing those shortcomings and integrating it into national policies and strategies for inclusive, artistic, cultural, social, economic development. And Honorable Nurse, then it is important to indicate that the revised white paper on art, culture and heritage also provides a platform, a basis for an inclusive, integrated and effective macro policy framework. And that is aimed at really accelerating development of the various diverse artistic practices, our cultures, and as well as heritage and traditions of South Africa. To do this, it aims, this white paper, that it will enhance the potential of various sectors, but also work in partnership with other departments and with the private sector across different levels of government, but also to eradicate what has said in the issue of the Shipwood Channel. What then happened, Honorable Chair, was that the revised white paper was going to look at its content, was going to deal with the following issues: determine the scope and objectives, values, vision, and principles that will be the underlying aspects of the revised white paper. But also look at the network, should be the policy proposals for the various sub-sectors, and then deal with the issue of education and training. And you cannot have a capacitated sector, a transformed sector, if skills are in there. So you need to make sure that education and training is put at the center, but also what, how can it assist to advance the rights of the artist, but also to deal with the issues of African art, culture, and heritage. I think everyone knows here that there is always a debate about indigenous knowledge systems that sometimes are not treated as central to our art, culture, and heritage, as it should. And then there was in fact even a longer debate, Honorable Chair, whether we should be using IKS or we should say indigenous knowledge systems. So it was a lot of debate around this issue, but at the end of the day, that terminology was eventually in itself agreed to, that we use for now indigenous knowledge systems. But also to then look at the issue of diplomacy and international cooperation, looking at art, culture, and heritage as a means to advance people-to-people engagement, but also as part and parcel of the foundation of government, Priority 7, which deals with a better Africa and better world, and how can we then contribute to utilizing art, culture in that regard, and when we enter into international treaties, and as well as bilateral level, to utilize this one paper to find that. There has been a serious issue around the lack of or slow transformation in the area of technical skills and events management. And we all know that that is where the money is, on the technical level. Because you need a stage, you need lighting, you need a number of things that must happen behind the stage before you can see artists performing in front of people. And most of the money you find that goes in that area. But that area is have very limited transformation even in terms of ownership of those equipment. But then it also looks at the issue of language and literature, as well as the libraries and information services, and how should this be advanced, the cultural and creative heritage industry. Maybe going back to the issue of libraries and information systems in particular, here one of the key issues is the disjuncture of alignment. If we look at what is expected of commissioner, what is expected of provincial government and local government, now you find that when you're trying to align and get work delivered at national, but there are constraints imposed by legislation in relation to what is the responsibility of local government in relation to these two areas in particular. And therefore, we find that it does not really advance that. So alignment was required to be looked at and how it can be best achieved. And then the issues of heritage, as I indicated, that the emphasis has been seen as being only about art and culture, without putting adequate emphasis on heritage. And that's that, needed to say, how do we mainstream this and see it as part of one process under the revised white paper. Then the issue of the funding models. There are too many funding models at play here, but the question is, are they making the required impact? And the various role players who are playing a role in terms of funding. So there is a chapter that deals with various models that are proposed on funding, if you look at the revised white paper, and how to then deal with that issue, and how to streamline but eliminate duplication, and make sure that we bring in private sector funding in the area of arts and culture in the country, but in a most regulated manner so it works better. And then, of course, I've spoken about intergovernmental cooperation in line with our constitutional expectations. And then monitoring and evaluation was one of the key areas that was seen as being maybe weak and a need to be strengthened? And then what are the roles and functions of the national department? So those are the areas that the revised white paper covers in terms of the proposed act of the Honourable Chair. So what is it that is being proposed then in various in these areas? The new dispensation looks at having the National Art and Audiovisual Council, this in relation to councils. Look at the issue of heritage and book council being introduced, and then look at technical skills academy to deal with issues of technical skills and backstage issues, but also then to deal with African art, culture, and heritage center. So the essence, then Honorable Chair, over and above the issue of the council was, what are the key elements that this revised white paper will deliver? Firstly, that it must be able to really be contextualized, be founded under the strategic repositioning of the role of national department in delivering HDH to all. This must be guided within the context and ambit of the developmental state. We know that sometimes we think we are a developed state. We are always reminded that we are a developmental state. What are the attributes of a developmental state? We cannot assume, and as it has been always said about South Africa, characterized by the two worlds that are far apart from each other, the poorest of the poor and the richest of the rich in the world. Now, how do you filter and make sure that those, even the two economies, are applying here? So the issue here is how do we make sure that with the development of state and the president today talks of an entrepreneurial state, so that then the state gets to a level where its people are self-reliant, are able to really advance its development. So in partnership then with the other role players, it's also to work with and with the cultural and creative industry. There was also then the issue that this must be founded also on the commitment to transform and the sector, transforming approach, and as well as look at the institutional structures and the reconfiguring those, but also look at processes for equitable delivery of ACH. I'm reminded, Honorable Chair, here, that the other time when one of my colleagues spoke about the swimming pools, and whether then we should be having our own real artistic hubs in the rural as well as the townships, so that people are able to really develop their talent and look at how we can distribute the issue of resources in the country. Because you can't transform unless you put in resources for transformation. So when you spoke about where are the swimming pools, I just remember always that concept, because it was an interesting thing, very touching, because you find that in terms of sometimes people, then they go to the beach, they drown, because they have not been exposed to swim. So we don't want them also to be like the Olivia, to leave this thing, because there is no recording studio, and they end up in the Hillbrook. You know that because so there must be platforms that you are looking at to make sure that our people have access and they are able to develop at a very tender age in this area. But commitment also to transforming the demographic and ownership profiles of the cultural creative industry. This Honorable Chair, if you look at the value chain issues, you'll find that when I went to London, it was very interesting how they have configured their argument. You find that because, you see, for you to have an event, you do need a stage. But to have a stage set up, you need a track. You need also for the stage to have the lighting. Someone must produce for the singer to have the mic. You know, the mic. So they are a very integrated approach to this sector. And that then enables participation by most. And the question is, in the country here currently, we've got limited ownership of the production, particularly in the backstage and technical events area. And therefore, then we need to change that. How many technicians do we have to be able to be involved? Not people who are creating tables told, move the table from here to there. The issue is the real ownership, meaningful participation in the set, and then address the complex set of persistent challenges that faces the area. I might not repeat that or check, but maximize the developmental social economic opportunities and allow me to then move it to a check, because I might be repeating myself. But just to say, yes, the last bullet, last two bullets, talks of facilitate and support involvement of South Africa's culture and trade in the global arena, including across the African continent, in particular, as part of the area, then the rest of the world, but also facilitate and promote moral regeneration and social cohesion. Because indeed, it is through us, culture, that we are really able to cement and create the sense of connectedness in South Africa. That's the reason why today we are celebrating Amokobo, which doesn't matter where you come from. In fact, Honorable Chair, we can say that this current team of world champions, if you look at the team itself, it's the most transformed team that we have. At some point, they had seven players who would otherwise not have been in there, using sport as an instrument of exclusion and division. Now sport is being used as an instrument for social cohesion and bringing South Africans together. So it's the same thing with the arts and culture. If you have a Cape Town Jazz Festival here, you don't care whether the person standing to me is from what religious background, whatever. We are connected together by the value of art for its own sake. We get entertained. We are together. At that time, I always say, if you were to measure happiness index, when people are at that, you will always say 100% of South Africans are happy, as if there's nothing else. Yes, we know that there might be other challenges. But at the end of the day, through art, culture, and heritage, we cement moral regeneration. We are able to build on the issue of social cohesion. So the revised white paper took all those things into consideration. And then the revised white paper also says that the potential of the sector to function as a source and a catalyst for innovation, social and economic development. Catalytic value of this is quite important, because if you look at the levels of economy, the country is facing quite a number of challenges. And studies have shown, through SACO in particular, that even during the most depressive times in the economy, you find that the sector is able to still sustain job creation, is able to still contribute to economic growth, and therefore that value must be kept in mind when we look at the white paper. And then policy alignment with both national and international priorities, as well as international treaties, as indicated there, like the UNESCO Declaration of Cultural Diversity, the Convention for Safeguarding of Intangible and Heritage. And this is quite crucial, and because some of the intangible heritage was taken out of this country and is currently lying in the hands of foreign nationals. And how do we make sure that these are protected and we have a proper legislative framework to protect them in line with these international conventions. And I think then it also says planning and the effective implementation and rigorous monitoring and evaluation of institutions is crucial, as well as programs at these institutions. So what is being proposed in the new dispensation, Honorable Chair? Firstly, is in relation to councils. In that maybe there be one council dealing with a National Art and Audiovisual Council, which will then have an oversight over performing arts, visual arts, craft design, creative writing, as well as audiovisual development. The second proposal is South African National Heritage Council to then look at all the issues relating to the matters of museums, monuments, heritage, geographical place names, heraldry, archives, libraries, and information centers. Then it says we must also have what we call additional clusters for existing national museums. It proposes that national heritage institutions in the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape be consolidated into one, and that all national museum councils be abolished, and that national museums be governed by the National Heritage Council. It further proposes the White Paper that we introduce or we establish what we call a South African Book and Publishing Development Council. This will be constituted by one representative from each publishing, printing, book trade, authors, editors, translators, and both higher and basic education and small business development. And that if it is an all-inclusive committee like the council, then it should be able to advance issues of language and literature in the country. And then South African National Academy of Technical Skills and Events Management. This was one of the very highly contested areas, Honorable Chair, because at first it was just assumed to be one of the subsumed in one of the chapters, but the proponents of the value of this area fought quite hard to make sure that it is treated as an independent chapter that can then be given dedicated attention, resourcing, and everything. And therefore then, now then it was included as South African National Academy on Technical Skills and Events Management to develop professional training in sound, lighting, stage, power, audiovisual reading, recording, and production skills. Then South African Center for African Art, Culture, and Heritage. These are the functions that will include project evaluation and funding, policy advice, monitoring and sector development. Honorable members, when you say reading, you see that people go to a stage of the various things, not a job reading, it has got to deal with how the thing is set up and sustaining all those things. And then on socio-economic impact assessment that was done and what were the findings, whether the policy will meet the intended purpose. That was conducted and finalized in October. And the department and the reference panel agreed that we were going to use SACO to conduct the socio-economic impact assessment study of the revised white paper on arts, culture, and heritage. And that is the socio-economic impact study commenced in April 2017. And then the report was first received by the department in August 2017. Then after the input, it was revised and then brought back in February 2018. Then always there are departments that are key when you do socio-economic impact assessment that have to be consulted, and that was done in April 2018, including DTI, science, technology, basic education, and higher education and training. We then, after that, had to do the submission to the DPME, and that we did in May and June, and then there was a certificate issued in August 2018, and to allow the department to present to the HPC-HD cluster, and then for cabinet. The presentations were done then to the cluster, and the HPC-HD cluster, and the cabinet, and that was in August 2018, and the revised white paper was then approved by cabinet in August 2018 after the presentation, and then the revised version of the white paper was then tabled in Parliament on October 12, 2018 for consideration. And we had a briefing to the entities in October and November 2018. Honorable Chair, I'm not sure whether we want to go into detail with the benefits that were then identified for socioeconomic empowerment, but it deals with various groups that will be affected and how they will benefit. We thought it's important to highlight that. So in relation to the South Africans, how will South Africans in general benefit from this? Is that there will be great appreciation on the richness and diverse of the HCH sector locally and internationally. As we know that sometimes people who are in the area of creative arts and they are only looking at visual art, they might just be focused on that. But we're hoping that the white people will create awareness generally for all South Africans to appreciate that this is a highly diverse and very rich sector. but also that it will provide policy clarity, consistency, and coherence across all spheres of government, as I made example in relation to the library, for instance. And then improve social cohesion and nation building would be achieved through a better understanding of all cultures, that diverse as they are, as well as heritage as diverse as it is. All South Africans will also be able to appreciate the economic value of the arts and begin to exploit that talent, and so that they can then not only decrease employment, unemployment, but also be able to build our own entrepreneurs in this area. So practitioners, it will lead to improved access to training, opportunity or capacity building, as well as the artists will enjoy increased market exposure, as we spoke about opportunities for global as well as local participation. And as we already have through NGV, the issues of marketing access. The proposal will also contribute to improved artists' status and rights, and creating opportunity for greater recognition of the work they do and appreciation for the work. They will also enjoy the intrinsic satisfaction through greater knowledge and acknowledgement that they will accrue from future generations. The proposal will contribute to the protection of our heritage, but also in terms of the issue of the local environmental heritage will be protected. My proposal also will contribute to the sustainability, and especially of South Africa's natural resources. And usually people think that when we talk of heritage, sometimes you are just talking of things that are above or are on land. But remember also, we've got a lot of heritage under the green economic concept, as well as under the water and heritage, but also to deal with intangible heritage that we have. But also Seiya also focused on the benefits for minority art, culture, and heritage communities, and then it outlines what will be the benefits that the marginalized heritage, like we're working hard now to deal with the issue of the coins, to make sure that that heritage is protected, preserved, but also promoted. Women, the revised white paper will contribute to enriching of the depth of talent, especially among women. In fact, research has shown that the majority participants in the arts sector, arts, culture, and arts sector is all youth, and of that, the majority is women. And that is non-statistic, and they are not given, even though they are not given unemployment, but the opportunities are bigger for them here. Same thing with the youth, it will do the same benefit. And then so the rural communities, as we look at expansion and revising the package to provide us culture and heritage, and delving into rural communities, they will benefit more, including if you have a liberation and resistance heritage. If you look at the issue of the cultural villages, if you look at the hubs, the several hubs, people will really benefit. If you look at the craft markets that are there, community art centers, and you look at the libraries that will be clearly distributed across the spheres of government, but especially in our community, where there will be most of the community Spanish people are. But also that people, persons with disabilities, will also be able to benefit and contribute to that. So if we look at the issues raised by CESA, it then covered issues of also educators, how would the educators benefit as practitioners, and the trust will have improved access to resources and to skilled practitioners, as we have artisan schools programs and now. But also that it will spread the importance of the retention, growth, and development of the sector. Educators will come to a better understanding of African knowledge systems once it has been embedded in the traditional system. There you can see African knowledge, which are the indigenous knowledge systems. Those are the debates about which terminology to use, the honorable chair. Institutions, and they will become more efficient and more effective in implementing the objectives, their own as well as that of government and that of the art and the proposals support improved collaboration and coordination between the institutions. It also will ensure that the ACH institutions focus on their mandate and outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
It will provide greater clarity of government policy, and the proposals will contribute to the improved cultural governance of this sector. Governance, as I indicated, the reconfiguration of councils, and instead of having 25 councils, one council per entity. Then the businesses will also make sure that they will benefit if this paper is passed, and that there will be greater clarity on the role of the private sector, particularly the business or who and where to support the ACH sector. But also business will be in error and in the issue. There is the issue of tax break on how this can happen, just like it happens with tourism. They find the tourism has got returns and the levies that they get. But this sector doesn't have that opportunity. There is a proposal looking to that in terms of tax break that a business can then approve and therefore then promote this sector. But also then it advocates for business to become a role player in preserving ACH. And we must say that a lot of the private sector, particularly the banking industry, we're working very well with them, and they're making quite a lot of contribution to the sector. Cultural enterprises will be supported and will have access to innovative finance and government. We have mentioned the issues of clarity in terms of that. So, Honorable Chair, in relation to where we are at the last aspect of it, is that this was presented to the Portfolio Committee for consideration. I'm aware that there was what needs to be done. So we are believing that this paper being presented to the Portfolio Committee for consideration and endorsement, and that if for whatever reason, and we are clear on how consultation has been done and that it will advance the interest of the sector, that the committee then endorses, and that will enable us the opportunity to take the process forward. Or if there is a sense, and for whatever reason, which we don't think is there, but for further engagement to consult, then the committee will also make that decision. But at this stage, we are saying that we would request the committee to consider the endorsement of the paper so that we can be able to move forward towards implementation. Honorable Chair, allow me to bow. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi, for a very the presentation paints a very bright future. My question is, this was it was created for lack of a better word, in 2015, and when are we going to see it coming to fruition, and how long will it take to put on, you know, to make all these beautiful steps I would call into into changing our lives. This white paper, does it say anything about the protection of traditional information, like the information that is within Eastern credible for, and are we really not sidelining that kind of information to be also recorded and protected, because that is very important as a citizen. And on the technical skills academy, how many technical skills academies do we have in South Africa? Mainly black ones, if they are. And yes. No, that's the one for now. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you for the presentation. It's quite an extensive document. But I would like to know the obstacles. Is this also, where can we see what is the problem that you foresee for implementing? And with all these, it is, as our colleague says, it colors a picture, but what are the, we were not part of this process, so it's very difficult for us to come and sit here and just agree and not our head, because it is a good document if you don't have any knowledge. But surely, if I look at the art and culture as it is at the moment, and the fact that there's no proper monitoring in evaluation and implementation, then I also have the question, what is the time frames for these for this document, and also what obstacles are there for the proposal?
I'm not sure whether my colleagues think that questions, I must ask my colleagues to deal with them. But Honorable Matigose, I think on the issue raised about the timeline, as I had indicated, in fact that has been one of the challenges. But when we thought we were on the verge of finalizing the document in terms of processes, there was that issue of the socio-economic impacts that needed to be done. That then digressed us a little bit. But at this stage, and then we presented to the portfolio committee, and we are presenting now to the portfolio committee with the request that if portfolio committee now, as soon as the portfolio committee has considered the presentation, and the paper itself, as well as the page itself, the committee will advise on the endorsement or what are the next steps that must be done by them. If the portfolio committee says no, we are satisfied to endorse, we will then move to speed in terms of the rolling out and the implementation. The only stage left is here, for us to get that feedback and noting that the committee is engaging with the matter for the first time. But it is my hope that rather than to put back and delay the benefits that will accrue to the creatives and the sector itself, that we ask for the committee to do that with the necessary agency, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, and that will assist. And then on the issue of the indigenous knowledge system, as you can see with the phrase there, it talks of African knowledge system, but the document, I was just trying to check the section, but maybe according to here with me, would be able to also assist. I wanted to look at the section because that was one of the very hotly debated aspects of the say, why were you going to protect and preserve indigenous? That's why it fell under whether you say indigenous or African. The federal says, only as long as it's about African, whether you say indigenous, knowledge systems and how they're going to be protected, let us do that and make sure that it is covered by the Act. So I will just ask, I wanted to just check the area here, but I believe that it does, Honorable Chair, talk to that aspect so that we are able to assist you in that context. But then my colleague can just check on that in the meantime. And on the issue of how many black owned technicals, I don't have the figure that I have, because I don't think it was done the actual audit on the trip. But what we do is that it is very, very few and who are having black owned technical people at this academy. And that is why most of them are extremely also expensive. Using the cost as a barrier to action to train young artists. The one that I know currently is quite vibrant and has delivered is the South African Project Association, a technical student academy that they have, where they are training young people, and they produce, I think, more than 200 of those young technicians who are then used and they expose them also at an international market. That is the one that I'm fully aware of. But then, we might, I don't think my colleagues can be able to talk like they have the figure in terms of the next time. Otherwise, we might take it as an area for research. And then maybe ask our research arm to look into assessing that area. I think Honorable Van Dijk, in relation to the issues you raised, which is tied to the question by Honorable Mahimbozi about when will this happen, and I think I've answered that one. What are the foreseeable obstacles or challenges in the implementation and execution of this revised white paper? I think the white paper aims to anticipate the challenges. That's why the proposals are there. But I must say that sometimes theory and practice, and that's why the two will inform each other. Because you might have a brilliant white paper, but when you implement, you will then encounter challenge. And then it becomes what we call or regard as a practice now informing what you must modify in the policy. And that's why policy review becomes quite critical. For now, we do not really foresee one of the reasons why socioeconomic impact assessment is done is to help the department and government to determine those things so that they do not approve the policy that is likely to be counterproductive. So based on the outcome of socioeconomic assessment and what is able to do, we should be able to, at this stage, achieve more of what the intention is of the white paper. Two, is that based on the resourcing, the challenges that you might normally have with budgetary constraints that you might have, and therefore not be able to roll out at the speed you want. For instance, if you look at how many townships or how many municipalities we have in this country, you might want to say every government has come with a district development model, but you might not be able to in each and every township over the next 5 years immediately have a recording studio or immediately have a filming studio. You might not be able to achieve those as quickly as you want. You might not have a library based on a particular note as you would immediately, but you will be having progressively an approach to achieve those intended outcomes of the white paper. But I know that if we were to say here, we have all the money, we have all the resources. Sometimes you might build a hospital, but you're running short of doctors. That becomes a problem. So here also you need to match that with skills available for for you to have these academies also to do the training, then you open them where it's likely to be a success. So I'm just saying, Honorable Mandev, to the Honorable Mandev's question, I'm not there because on all foreseeable challenges, but I know that sometimes the issue of funding becomes a challenge. But in terms of resistance to change, you might have those elements, but so far, based on level of consultation, there is a readiness to assess the paper rather than to have written a strong resistance to it. I think those who had a critical area, they raised a particular on the technical areas, and even myself, personally, I tried to engage with those, and we tried to address the issue here to make sure that that is captured, not only as a staff thing somewhere, but that it becomes a focal point for development of the sector, Honorable Chair. And then those are the two areas I might just say where you might be having some challenges as you implement. But I think we should be able to mitigate those challenges, Honorable Chair.
If we should go hold the circle and rise.
Wait, thank you so much. You know, I want to raise something within this committee and the department. In front of me, I'm having about two letters written to me. Maybe what I must do every now and then, it must be recorded. I must read. We have adopted the program until December, this committee. And we are about to get to another quarter, which we are not yet having the program for the next quarter. I'm suspecting it is very important because we also want to take oversight. We also want to take oversight locally and internationally and Africa. I'm having a correspondent here. It's dear Chairperson, may I request that we have a presentation on Freedom Park status, our legacy project in trouble. May we have a report on the crisis in our heritage site at Freedom Park regarding allegations, mismanagement, and maladministration in our next meeting. I'm reading this that every now and then we must not focus on the program which we adopted. If you can allow me that these letters, maybe they are right to address to me in order that maybe in the quarter coming, we must prioritize in our programming. But we did come here with a program to the fully fledged committee to present a proposal and wanted the additions and amendments. And in some other time, I was thinking that if there's something which is very urgent from honorable members, they've got a right to write to the minister. Because there are those questions that they don't wait to be a question time that they write. This information is from Honorable Mclong. So I would love not to respond as individual. I do have a response. I'm putting in the comment. The next letter is from Honorable, this is the head of fourth time, Veronica, Honorable Veronica Van Dijk. Addressed to the chairperson, whistleblowers, suspension, dismissal.
I want to bring the following to your attention because I think it concerns all of us in the community. The social media, ENCA, reflect that whistleblower at Freedom Park will today be receiving suspension letters. During my personal oversight to the entity, it was clear that there are employees who are indeed in distress. The same is happening at Parkcourt. Employees and shop steward union representatives who have been suspended, some for more than a year, are now facing dismissal for the same reason. At the National Museum, Bloemfontein, employees are also investigated for sharing information on request. It seems as if there is no protection for whistleblowers. They truly are being victimized. It is important that we as the committee, as we do oversight to the said entities in order to play an active oversight role in this matter, assisting in seeking solutions to make our entities work. There are too many problems and too little is done to actually hold senior management and the board accountable for their role in this. Can we please put this issue on the agenda as a matter of urgency? Sometimes when I'm sitting here, we have contact advisors that were put to advise the chairperson in the committee. And my first response in the second one, I see it as a labor issue. And if it's a labor issue, what can I do as a chairperson? And according to the information, there are unions which are there. Honorable members, I'm putting to you and then even the department that I don't want that honorable members will feel that they are being suppressed. So now is the time that all these letters that are coming to me, you will advise whether it must be a committee role or it must be a departmental role. I'm putting this to you members. I thank you. Can you wait the owner of the letter in order that they must respond to you, because Mr. Mhlongo is not here, you are here, but if the one of the letters written by your good self, so I'm putting this to the committee, including you, because when they are responding, we will check with you what do you feel about the responses.
Quarter program,
Yes, I would agree with the chairperson that we can write to the minister for the minister to provide results. Secondly, of course, subject to correction, I would have a problem where we always respond to issues that were not initiated by the committee. You see, when I go home for my constituents' work, then I visit one side, then I discover something which I'm doing on my own or on behalf of my party. And before I can even give details, then I want it to be on the program to be discussed. It is going to disorganize us, because every Monday, all parties are doing their constituency work. Now, three, I think we must refrain from the temptation of being, for a lack of a better word, being shop stewards for employees. If an employee or a member of the community or a member of society has an issue, let that member raise the issue. Otherwise, we run the risk of maybe I should not say that. But the bottom line is I would prefer where we don't become shop stewards. Because I just imagine how many employees are facing disciplinary process on a daily basis in the country. How many employees are facing suspensions or dismissal on a daily basis. And some of them will talk to us, some will write to us. I think I respect one person, Fredinia Taylor. He has been raising his issues to us, but nobody represented him per se. And even when we referred the matter to the department, is because that individual person raised issues. So if we get into the temptation of representing employees on labor issues, we're going to have a problem, because it will need investigation, because you can't hear one side of the story. Now you must set up a committee, unless we agree with the committee that now we're going to investigate. You set up a subcommittee, we go investigate, we listen to both sides of the story, because we can't take a decision based on one side of the story. That would be my input, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I believe that we should be doing our oversight as member of parliament within our portfolios, and I believe that also this point that Honourable Sam is talking about, it was raised by one of the committee members. So it did come. It did come as the same as the letters that have been written to you, Chairperson. There are also some of the people that are, you know, I believe that there's a lot that is being swept under the carpet, or maybe pushed aside because of the amount of for lack of a better word, like the people who are being they're being undermined, and they're being threatened or even expelled from their work because they have no support. They have no money. to go and get lawyers and all that, and they're going to lose their jobs. But they are for the truth. Whistleblowers and all that. I have some of the whistleblowers that are talking to me, and I go to this Pretoria State Theater, and I know the guys, and you know, certain guys, there are people who are, you know, they have problems with how you guys are doing your thing, and can you fix it? So when I see that they are not fixing it, then I'll come and raise it. Maybe I'll write a letter like Mr. Van Dijk has done, so that the committee can look at it. Not that we will bring all the problems that we hear from outside into the committee, that we start be acting like shop straws, or you know, come up with the committee that we investigate. These are the people that we represent. So when they come and call us and cry, we shouldn't just go and say, no, go back to your people, talk to your you know, shop stewards. I don't think that is the best way of doing it. Yes, whatever we are doing here, we represent the people, and we need to listen to them and see how we can go about doing it. That is my take on it.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In as much as you have got our own problem, but there are issues that we have.
Thank you.
Chairperson?
My mic,
huh? What I'm saying, in as much as we have got our own problem, but there are certain issues that we have to be in. You know, when you are here, we are department heads, and the people that would have trust, confidence in us, because we are here for the people of representing our people, for the welfare of the people. What I think is that now, whatever comes in, it is not in our program, but now we'll see the way how to facilitate it, so that we make it even. We don't talk about it, but now we do give advice, because people do trust us. We don't trust us, just like saying a local person goes to the Ward Council with the issue of water. Then the Ward Council will say, you know, this is the competence of the district. That is out of order. Because that Ward Council now, in as much as it is the competence of the district, but now we should see how this person should be assisted. Because what the local person knows is this Ward Council. Then the person should know it, then I should be assisted. So what I'm saying now, we should see how we can facilitate the issue, and that now we do assist, whether it can be referred to the labor committee, whatever, but now we should assist our people. Sorry,
Honourable Member,
Honourable
Member, I'm going to
thank you, Chairperson, but I was covered because of the issues of employees. You know, there are processes that you need to follow when there is an issue regarding to an employee, because in the workplace, they've got an understanding that there are shop stewards in the workplace, so that the engagement should start there, and then if maybe our honourable member thinks maybe that it is not fair or whatsoever, the matter can be taken up. There are processes that need to be followed. There are CCMA, there are different kinds of courts. So that after that, we just not interfere in an issue that has not been resolved. After it has been resolved and been failed locally, so that's when maybe we can entertain and take it to the relevant structure. Thank you.
Members, I was doing this in order that I must not miss the steps. when we are talking about the labor issues, the Gapowa Transkei Post Office Workers Association, and after unbending called the Portwa. So I know the difference between the worker and the employer. There are processes. I'm not saying that I do undermine this, but immediately that you see that the employer is not doing fairly to you, you do go to your shop steward. If your shop stewards are referring to you, they will. I was asking the content rights to the CMA. And then from there, the process is procedural. And now we are members of parliament. What I know that immediately that I'm in a meeting and I've got a problem in my constituency, I go straight to the relevant department and ministry, saying that I was in this constituency. Can you help? That's why I was saying these are relevant letters that somebody was doing a constituency work. But the constituency work of something which is related with a certain department, I'm suspecting that I'm having a right being chairperson of this committee, that I don't have answers. And the answers I must get it from the department. And that's why I'm tabling. I didn't share this under the cabinet. But if I can attempt to answer something that I don't know what there is in the department which is involved with that individual. So I don't think I'm undermining, but there are those sometimes, like if you can look at the of the letter written to me by Honorable Song, when one were in this parliament, all members, they do have a right to write to the relevant minister. And the relevant minister, if doesn't respond to the individual member, that individual member does have a right to say, Chairperson, I wrote to this department of ours. They didn't respond. And the response we want in the portfolio committee, because the question time in parliament has got a limited time. Sometimes you see that those questions who are in the question paper, when time comes, cut off of time, you will say that, please minister, respond in writing. So I'm trying to follow procedure. I'm not undermining any other person. Honorable Fande.
Chairperson, I took the committee as a starting point. That's why I also included the members. And this is not only a labor issue. We, in our BRRR report, we actually said that we are going to be more proactive, specifically with regards to victimization and intimidation towards employees. And that's what's happening in these departments. I want to actually prove it by how bad it could be for those people. Because after that oversight that I've done in, and I want to explain to the members, to the Bloemfontein Museum, I actually received a letter from, a court letter from the CEO that demand me to refrain from stalking her and to monitor her movement. And I'm telling you, I must, and she's also getting an interdict, she clearly doesn't understand our role doing oversight. Now, I mentioned this just to indicate to you, if she does that to me as a member of parliament, just doing my oversight, she's got a degree in law, in master's degree, what protection does workers have in that setup?
Then we come back to the Performance Act Center of the Free State. The staff that was dismissed there or was suspended there was actually the representatives of the union. So they've been, some of them, for more than a year, has been suspended. And now they face this week dismissal letters. And they were suspended because they brought forward irregularities within the entity. And then Freedom Park, almost half of the employees are now suspended. Mm. It cannot be that we sit here as a committee and say this, it must be a labor issue and we don't interfere. It's really our duty, I think, to prioritize, to do oversight. We are able, Chairperson, to change the program. Some of those issues, if I think of last week, I sat here and listened to something that I really think this is really much more important. People are faced with dismissal because they spoke out on corruption issues, and they are proof of these issues. It was never followed up on. So for us to just say it's a labor issue and we cannot interfere, I think we do have the right to go there, speak with the, it's part of our duty, speak with the employees and see what, and like my colleague said, listen to both sides, the ultimate rule. We need to go there and I would suggest really that we as a group of committee members stand by each other and show the people out there that we really take the matters to heart, not because we want to interfere in the Labour Act, but because we care for them and the situation in which they work. So I hope that this can be considered. What else do we want to say about recommendations of the BRRR? We don't want to actually investigate and see how we can assist these people that truly is going through a very rough time, and it's almost Christmas. So we're all going to have a nice Christmas duck or chicken or whatever we're going to have, and they're going to wonder where the next payment is going to come from. It's not right.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Without going into detail of the matter, I think firstly we all respect the rights of the committee oversight and their responsibility. And we should do that not because of anything else, but it's the obligation we have to abide by. Then so that maybe the chairperson, the issues raised upon this particular entity, I can just at a high level indicate what happened. Because when we leave, we will also go back and say what exactly this is raised. And then one of the key things what was raised was maybe the perception that the honorable members concerned, member concerned, on the approach of that, they make their own allegations of what they perceive as how the honorable member did that engagement or that oversight with those that maybe believed are the people that you must talk to. And the management feeling agreed that maybe they were not also even appraised of the arrival of the member, and then just discovered the member was there, and suddenly those engagements, as if there was a stalking of things, yet in fact maybe it was a really genuine oversight of them. So you then enter into a terrain of us and them, so there's nothing in writing maybe that then is raised by the parties, either maybe to management if there is any, which then says, management, what did you do with the question that contains rape? So I said we will need that information. For instance, with the Freedom Park, there were those issues being raised. Same thing with this museum in Free State, the honorable might raise. And you can see now that this thing is taking a very hostile turn towards the member, when the member is doing the work that he's supposed to do as an oversight. So maybe honorable chair, oversight when it's being done. I just don't know how to separate between oversight as a constituency vis-a-vis oversight as a committee. Because if it's oversight as a committee, there will always be, there is a process that is followed. People know that the oversight is coming. There will be engagement, there will be reports. Reports will be submitted to the department. What is needed to be done to intervene on those issues. But I'm not sure what happens if the individual member decides to just go to a particular entity. And that is not my area to be involved in. But it's just that then after that, there is this aftermath of saying, no, you spoke to this member, one that is trying to just create problems or there are real problems. So what we have done regarding the issue of Freedom Bank was that we did receive the report. I will not go into detail. Written report by the union, the department in August. Then as a normal practice, we forwarded that to the CEO to say we have received this, and the CEO must be able to respond. They then responded in September, to indicate what are the issues relating to the allegations leveraged against management. But then they made a right that said in that letter or that report that the council have decided to appoint an independent body to investigate these allegations. Therefore, then they will give us a report once that is done. So, procedurally, because we can't just get there, but our role is to play that oversight and make sure that we get the feedback from them. So, based on those concerns, we need to then wait and get the report on the findings of that independent panel on the allegations level. But subsequent to the checkpoint matter, I also then sent the team the entities units to go there and determine what exactly are the other issues based on what the checkpoint has raised, which I expect to get also a report from them. So I'm raising that, and then the issue of PACOS. Was very far back, so I cannot respond to that unless I have individuals who are being mentioned. If you go back to the edit, and you start saying there is this allegation, the first starting point is, do you have anything in writing? Who is complaining? You call a meeting, nobody talks. So you need, once you deal in Zoom with those, you need particularity of matter. You're not only dealing with the broad issues now. You're dealing with who is being suspended, who is being banned, and why. And you need to then allow the council first to deal with the matter. And if the council can't deal with the matter, because the council is responsible for employment of the CEO is responsible for the process then of appointing the staff. So those protocols, because if you intervene prematurely, the department then, even if you are taking people, we won't win that matter because there are institutional structures of governance that are there that need to be given responsibility towards the staff. So PACOPS, the matter of PACOPS come very far and honorable today. What we will need, and there have been investigations there, some of them quite serious. So if, and then there are people who are suspended, so I have a different also report about people who are being charged for certain allegations, some of them reported in terms of criminal process. So to respond, whether it was because of the whistleblowing or not, would be difficult for us at this stage without that report. On whistleblowing, to assure the honorable members from our side, when the Portfolio Committee reported the matter in one of the institutions, it's on record, we acted, we had to deal with that because we cannot allow a situation where whistleblowers are victimized. But we had to do an investigation so that we come to the root cause. But the Portfolio Committee raised the matter, indicated this is the detail, but we had something in writing, not a word of mouth also. Without something in writing, it becomes difficult. And we acted on the dysfunctionality of some of these allegations. As I reported before, we've done a lot of it, even forensic investigations in the department. In about five institutions or four, we had two, because PACOPS was facing the same challenges, market theatre had the same challenges, and NLBF had the similar challenges. So where we have a rim, a rock and island, a hotel, so we had to appoint, we do act in those. Minister will then say, here the report, instruct the board of the council to implement the recommendations. So I'm saying here, it might be just a question of process and how things are filtered through various role players so that then they are being addressed.
Chief, I just want, you will remember that I've also sent an email with a meeting that was held at the Bloemfontein, the National Museum. And in that agenda, the one of the points, agenda points, was actually to discuss the role of MPs, the protocol that we follow when we do oversight. Now, we have a clear role to do oversight. And in that meeting, it was recorded that the Department of Arts and Culture actually, by implication, says that members of parliament may not go on individual oversight. And that's why I also have written a letter to you to get clarity what our role, what the department sees, how they see our role. Because if that's the fact that the department actually gives that indication to, like, the CEO of the Bloemfontein Museum, they are ill-informing the department, that entity. And otherwise, if the department or if the CEO actually told the staff members that you may not speak with members of parliament, as I said, I've got it on record, then, because you're not allowed, you're prohibited to speak, then it clearly shows, and that there also, the chairperson or the CEO also said that everything that goes from this entity will be vetted for by the CEO or under the board. Now, that clearly gives you an indication that if we're supposed to do oversight, and that's, we are restricted to do that oversight, it's not right, and the department is then in the wrong, and that should be made very clear. And that's why I asked that you give us a document that shows where we are not performing our duties or how we actually are breaking the protocol. Because I've never heard that a member of parliament are not allowed in any public entity to do oversight. I also want to come back to PACOPS. The reason I mentioned the suspension of these people, they were suspended after. And allegations made to the, against them after they whistleblow. And why is the allegation, as you say, was so serious? Have they not been followed up? And some of them are a year, older than a year. It cannot be right. How long does it take to sort out something if these people are so corrupt? Then there's a problem in our oversight and monitoring. Chairperson, I will really urge you that we, as a committee, go and do oversight, because we cannot only trust what the department says. I think we also have an objective role to go and do our own oversight and speak to the people. How can I trust the CEO of Bloemfontein Museum after receiving a letter to forbid me, actually to demand me not to come and do oversight there? That gives you a clear indication that there is a lot of wrong in that. And I cannot even begin that we can protect a person like that who is in charge of an entity. I
urge you, we must go and do other side.
Thank you, Honourable
The point that doesn't sit right with me is to inform the places that you'll be going to do oversight so that they can you know clean themselves up before we come. I don't think that is going to make anything. It's not going to better the situation, but it should make it look like it is doing right. I've been twice being refused into getting to this institution, but I forced my way through, and I go and talk to the people. And I don't think really it's a good plan to go and tell the drug dealers that hey, we're coming to search on Monday,
yeah.
And then we think that we're going to get drugs there. It doesn't work like that. We need to go there and do our oversight and just go and just appear and just come and check everything whether is everything all right. And but if we are going to report to the department that tells those guys that we are coming, who knows that the actual department is going to tell them that listen, these guys are coming over there. So come on, put your make yourself look good. So really, I think the committee should give us the power to say, listen, you go and do your it's not like we're going to go there and we're just going to go there and report what we see. You know, and it is the duty that put me where I am right now to go and you see, it takes me back when the schools were in, I'm talking about black environment where there would be this person called Umshori. Umshori would just come without without blowing whistle that I'm coming, so that the teachers will always know that they must always be on their on their toes and teaching the kids. And our schools were perfect, with the less what the education was flawed, but we were very, very organized but we should be doing the same thing right now. Where we go as our school, we go and go and scholar these people. You know, otherwise we are going to protect each other, because now I know guys state theater, and some of them that they've been my friends for the last 20 years. But I'm there to go and check them out because people are crying, both of them there. So I haven't reported that, but I think that we should just go, and just clean it up. Otherwise, nothing is going to be fixed. We'll always protect each other. Because if I want to lose my friend, I'll just go, man, come on, can you get this off? These guys are coming, anyway. So, yeah, thank you, Chen.
Yeah, thanks, Chen. I think Honorable Mishaiza said it well, that when people raise issues, it is our duty to assist them. But I'm also saying, in terms of the rule book, if we want to investigate, it must be our conscious decision. Now, in Eastern Cape, they don't know that I'm an MP. There's security at the gate at the inner hospital. Yesterday there was theft. And I get there, security refuses me entry because they were given instruction by the CEO or HOD to say nobody must get in if you don't know this person. So it's not their role to make a proper arrangement. If I'm doing oversight on behalf of my party and I want to visit a school, I inform the relevant authority that I'll be coming to your school to do oversight. Now, what is oversight? Maybe we should one day talk about oversight. Of course, the rule book again says the committee can agree on how to conduct their business. But if you want to visit areas, that's why sometimes when we do oversight, we're even given security. Even after informing the relevant authority, we're even given security to make sure that its parliamentarians are protected. Now, if something happens, because members, remember, we're not yet in that constituency model. We just elect the party, and the party sends people to parliament. Now, you can't claim that everybody knows you, that you are a member of parliament. One day you may get in there and they mistake you for a thief and they deal with you because poor arrangements were not made. I mean, there's also a risk factor. And as parliamentarians, we're allowed to summon anybody, we're allowed to summon any organization to come and account. But if we do it in such a manner that is not correct because we suspect that they'll give us the wrong information, we have a way of establishing whether you're giving us the wrong information or the correct information. But I'm just saying, some of the things we can avoid. I'm not saying don't do your oversight, but I'm saying if you want to do it in such a way that we avoid certain risks, whatever. For example, in terms of labor law, if we take a decision in this committee, for example, that the CEO of that organization is wrong, is not doing anything, already we have passed judgment. And in terms of the labor law, that is not allowed. When we say, because we can't charge yet, she must be charged according to the procedures. But by the time we say she's found guilty, she'll quote, there's a resolution of the committee that I was found guilty even before I was subjected to a process. So those are the things we need to take care of. But I'm saying, if we want to investigate, the rule book allows us, we must discuss it and agree and say, now we're going to investigate. If we're doing oversight, I think it would be safe for any of us to inform, to make proper arrangements, to make sure. Otherwise, we're going to complain every day that I wanted to enter this gate, I was refused. Because they don't know me. They don't know that I'm an MP. And they don't know that I'm serving in a portfolio committee on a... That's why I gave an example of Nyatela. That Nyatela wrote to us, and because of what she wrote to us, we referred it to the department. That's what Honorable Chaisa is saying, that we must assist them. They are members of the public, we are their representatives. So it doesn't mean that we should not do our job, but if we don't do it properly, we are going to end up in this process where we are being punched and later they say, oh, sorry, I didn't know that you are a member of parliament. I beat you by mistake. Sorry for that, my apologies. That's my future.
Honourable members, we are taking this to the committee in order that we must have our own views, not undermining any contribution of anyone. I've said one member saying that he doesn't trust the department. Some of us we still trust the department because we do have people who they are working under the guiding of law. Like when I'm hearing what we have done, as I'm sitting here, I'm having a letter from the speaker. So now, of course, today I'm having this response. I'll respond to the speaker. And as this committee, if we're proposing to do the oversight as a committee, because with this period, we didn't have chance of going to the oversight because of the problem of our committee. We decided to sit and do what we're thinking that we must do. In our programming, we take care of the proposals of the members. Because we did say that in fifth parliament, we've done the oversight in certain provinces. Because of time frames, we didn't go to other provinces. And when I was discussing with the new department, I was taking on both sides, where did you last go, and where are the hot spots that we are thinking. So I was taking this in order that each department must reflect, and when we are doing oversight, we don't leave them behind, because sometimes we do one thing that they must respond on the spot. They are always giving us the stuff. So as today, I'm saying that we've discussed this thing at length. There are some processes that the department has taken, but it does not to allow us, when we're doing oversight, we must go there. And there's no one who is saying that we must not do the oversight. But some of us were highlighted that where there are labor issues, when you get there, you will get what now they are telling us, that there is an investigation which are put in there. But as a committee, when we're doing oversight, we know how to do. And when we're doing oversight, we don't not to tell the area, in order that we must go there. We sit down when we are doing the oversight that we are going to Free State, want to go to that drug, what is that place? Yeah? Testing center. They must know that we are going. We cannot not to tell them, even those who are being chosen. We'll go there, and we have what a right to go, and irrespective of their thinking that they will hide anything, we'll get workers there, we'll get senior management there. You don't want to get the only walls. You want people who must respond to us as the Parliament of South Africa. So I'm suspecting today, discuss this letter. I will be always doing this, because sometimes I can't respond in so many letters that are getting in my office. I will need this kind of platform, in order that you must not say, hey, Chairperson is putting under the red carpet. There was one member saying that some other things are put on the red carpet. We are not here to do that. We are here to check even those who are under red carpet. And the way of taking it, those who are under red carpet, we are asking questions. I can cite one thing. We went to do an oversight in Free State. When we got that, there was huge millions that they have finished the pool. And when now there was time that after we've been briefed, let's go and see that pool. Honorable members, there was no pool there. There was a hole that maybe can make his to fall in that hole. And then when we went back, I said, councillor member, tell us, yo, tried to deal with us, and we dealt with him. So they are always not, if they've done wrong, they are always not happy when we're going there. So trust us that the oversight we do accordingly. I'm suspecting by those words, can I tell you that Mr. Mayedwa from Rally, South Africa, has confirmed that the box will come to Parliament on Monday, who will confirm the child on the box having landed at OR. I'm giving you assurance that come the next quarter, we'll prioritize all the red spots issues that are wanted to come to. By those words, thank you to the department and to the honorable members. Please, if you don't trust department, as you're saying, trust us. Please, trust Chairperson with this collective. We'll go and do the oversight. But if department, some of us, we do trust the department. Maybe one will be individual, but we don't trust you. Because we've been put in there by the ruling party. We can't not to trust you, but we'll monitor you every day, morning and evening. DG, he knows, Mbalula once said, one other time, in a platform of a media, that this chairperson called me even in 12 a.m. when the problems are getting to my email. I was talking with the minister whilst he was in Japan, because I want to present the collective of this committee. When he comes here, he must know what is it. DG, you know that we were having a meeting last week. Your officials are supposed to have been reported. We've got this committee that Isafa is complaining, saying that the minister was saying when he comes back from Japan, he's going to meet with them. So they were saying that they are not yet having that chance to meet with the minister. And now the minister already has called the date of the Indaba. We're all saying Indaba, it was also our baby, saying that we want Indaba. But we said they must go and sort it. And as I'm sitting here, I've called the minister saying that you must sort that thing, DG, because we want that Indaba. And already I'm seeing an invite here in front of me, but would love that whilst minister is in the water press and has been called, please, on behalf of the committee, go and tell him that these people, they were saying they are not rejecting Indaba, but they were saying he promised them that when he's coming from Japan, they will sit down, they want to table, and we want that you must solve that thing amicably. I'm presenting this committee now. The meeting is closed. Thank you so much.
Chairperson, excuse me, this time we have another